Welcome to episode number 28 of the First Responder Wellness Podcast. I'm thrilled that you joined us for the show. My name is Conrad Weaver, and I'm grateful for you. Thank you for taking time to listen or watch this podcast. I really do appreciate it. This podcast features conversations with a lot of first responders. Well, today I have David Nathanson on the program. David is a retired Marine who has commanded at every level from platoon to regiment, including a combat logistics battalion during Operation Iraqi Freedom. He spent more than 30 years in the Marine Corps, and we will hear how his life unraveled after his retirement and how he's working to put it back together and to help others who have suffered in the same way. David currently serves as the executive director for Eagle Oak Retreat, a nonprofit organization that provides wellness services and post-traumatic growth training to combat veterans and first responders. Stay tuned for this informative and compelling conversation. Hey, thanks for listening to the podcast, and I'm grateful for everyone who's joining us on our YouTube channel. And if you're on a podcast audio app like Apple Podcasts or Spotify, I want to invite you to join us on YouTube where you can watch this interview and all the others that we've done. Plus, we have a ton of additional content, including my series recap from our Coast to Coast bicycle tour this past summer. So come on over and subscribe to the Wellness Channel on YouTube, and I'll see you there. Thanks again for listening and watching. And now here's my conversation with David Nathanson. Well, David, welcome to the First Responder Wellness Podcast. I'm really excited to meet you and looking forward to talking to you today.
Thank you, Conrad. Appreciate it. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about what you do. I mean, well, actually, let's go back. Let's talk about your background first. Where do you come from, and how did you get into the wellness space?
So I originally hailed from the great state of New Jersey, born, raised, and educated there. Got out as quickly as I could, not because New Jersey was bad, but because, you know, I was answering a higher calling, and that was to serve the country. And so I joined the Marines at 17. And I stayed until I was 52. Best 34 years of my life. Had a purpose, had a passion, had a mission, had brothers and sisters on my left and my right that really fulfilled my life. When I was asked to leave the service, I struggled in retirement. And what I came to find out very quickly was trauma experienced over the course of that 34 years to include, you know, combat deaths, actual combat experiences, training accidents, training deaths, suicides, was something that was building on me, and I never addressed it. I compartmentalized it because my fear was to acknowledge first and foremost that I was injured by this experience would cause, you know, the decision makers to kind of look sideways at me and say, is he fit for duty? Is he the best, most fully qualified? And so I hit it and I find myself in a civilian world. Now I no longer have purpose. I no longer have passion. I no longer have focus. I've been separated from my tribe, so to speak. And I find myself left with nothing but my trauma. And it came home to roost in a big way. And so first and foremost, I was able to find a position as the executive director for Eagle Oak Retreat Foundation. It is a retreat set up to provide veterans and first responders with the ability, the training, and the experience to transcend that trauma and move into post-traumatic growth. But before I was the executive director, I was a participant. So I went through this program, and I will tell anybody who's listening right now, fundamentally changed my life, but most importantly, it saved my life. I found myself depressed. I found myself contemplating, would things be better if I were not here? And a good friend of mine reached out and said, how are you doing? I gave him the standard answer, and he penetrated the lie and said, no, how are you really doing? And he recommended this program. So that's how I got where I am today.
Yeah. So would you say that your journey to this space where you are now really started in earnest when you retired? And so when you kind of made that step away from your tribe, so to speak.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it came right at the moment where I needed it the most. And in subsequent, you know, reflection on it, it also came at a time where I think the country needs it the most. And, you know, I don't think it's a stretch to say that folks in all communities and all vocations are suffering, you know, from trauma. and they're not quite sure how to deal with it or why it is they feel the way they feel. And so for me, this was just the, you know, the set of circumstances come together at the right place at the right time for me to get involved and to do something about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, thank you for your service to our country. I really appreciate that. You know, in your years of service, were you, you know, anywhere in that time, were you aware of some of the things that were building in your mind, in your life?
I was. And I think after each combat deployment would end and we would come home, I realized that the person I saw in the mirror was not the same, you know, when he left. When I looked at my interpersonal relationships with my family and friends, I realized that things were not quite the same. And I was unable to enjoy everything that life was offering. I found myself retracting and isolating. I found myself withdrawing, you know, from my family and friends. I mean, my trauma, because I didn't address it, cost me a marriage. I was unable to talk to my former spouse about why I was the way I was. And I felt that even if I did, she wouldn't understand because she didn't experience it. It cost me my relationship with my kids. I'm 4 years estranged with my kids to this day. And I still have, you know, a really hard time reconnecting with them. So I saw the indications and warnings, but I ignored them. I ignored them because first and foremost, you know, the warrior mentality, and I include all first responders in that, is that's part of the job. You signed up for that. Suck it up, you know, move on to the next mission. I ignored it because with each exposure to traumatic experiences and my ability to handle them appropriately, more rank was bestowed upon my collar, more opportunities. You know, the fabric that decorates our uniforms in terms of personal awards became to grow. And what I started to do is I started to value the wrong things instead of valuing myself and my, you know, well-being. I valued that next promotion, that next opportunity. So the signs were there. I just ignored them, to be quite honest about it.
What were some of those physical things in your life that you saw that kind of made you pause and say, there's something here?
First and foremost, I looked in the man in the mirror. He did not look the same as he had in many years. I found myself in retirement, you know, over 30 pounds overweight. You know, the face just looked drawn, you know, lack of color, inability to smile, just didn't recognize the man I was staring at. And then when I was in reflective moments and I stepped outside myself and watched myself in action with the community and my family, I realized I was not the same. You know, I'm a guy who succeeded in the Marines, did very well. And in retirement, I've been fired from 3 jobs, which is just, you know, unfathomable. It's like I couldn't keep a job. And I realized as I was looking at myself, it was because I kept looking backwards instead of forward. I convinced myself that, you know, the rearview mirror was for residents and not reflection. And what that manifested itself in presentation was I would sit at work and I would be like, well, all my work should be good enough because I was, you know, I was a general select in the Marine Corps, top of the food chain. Of course, my answers are accurate and correct. Just accept it. Or you never serve. Therefore, you know, I'm better than you. No matter how much I personally didn't believe it, I believed my actions projected that. So those were the things that I started to see. And then probably the most telltale was you know, I had an unhealthy relationship with rage, and that rage would kick off in a second, and the simplest of things would set me off. And I realized that I had done such a good job at suppressing my fight or flight response that my default response was to fight at all times over just stupid things, right? Parking spaces, position in traffic, you know, grandkids doing something that is simply ridiculous, like Cheerios on the floor. I mean, who cares? So those are kind of the things that I saw in myself that I knew I needed help.
Mm-hmm. And what was the moment that you said yes to receiving help?
It was one of those aha moments that, you know, hit me like a, you know, a sledgehammer. So I've been fortunate enough to remarry. I'm married to one of the most amazing people I've ever met. And, you know, she is a Gold Star spouse. So she lost her husband of 26 years, who was also a Marine. And, you know, day in and day out, She is open. She is authentic. She is genuine. She tries to leave an engagement or an interaction with people, you know, better than when she got there. And we were married on a Wednesday. And then that Friday, you know, I had one of my outbursts where, you know, I went after my sister, my brother-in-law, and everybody in the house over things that had nothing to do with the moment. And I, as I walked away from it and gave myself some time and space, I immediately felt ashamed and embarrassed and confused. I'm given an opportunity to be with this most amazing person. Why can't I just be happy? And why am I angry? Why am I upset about trivial things? And in that moment, I realized I needed something. But the traditional things that I were trying wasn't helping. So the medications that the VA gave me, all they did was numb my brain. They didn't address the cause. Self-medication with alcohol. You know, I found myself in the middle of the day drinking. It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon and I've already had, you know, way too many drinks. And so I said to myself, I got to do something. And that's where I had to make a choice. And on this side, the choice was join one of those, you know, 17 or 22 veterans who take their lives a day. And this choice here was to find an alternative way to reconcile and deal with and transcend what was going on. And fortunately for me, when I was contemplating both, my phone rang and somebody had said, again, how are you doing? And I gave him the standard boilerplate answer, I'm fine. And he stopped me in my tracks because he said, no, how are you really doing? And I could see there was genuine concern in the line of questioning. And so I told him, I says, I'm having one of my worst days ever. And I've been having worse days, you know, for the last 18 months. And he told me about this program, Warrior Path, progressive alternative training for helping heroes. And he encouraged me to go, and I went. And as I was going through that program, the founders pulled me aside and said, we would like to keep you here to help others. So mm-hmm. That for me was the moment where I knew I had to do something different, because it was either end up dead or end up alone and miserable, which is where I saw myself heading.
I think with a lot of first responders and veterans as well, at least those who I've talked to, sometimes there's a hesitancy or a fear of going into a program such as, you know, yours, because you got to face all the stuff, right? Yeah. And so how do you do that? How do you go into a program like that and really, you know, square up with all the stuff that you have been pushing to the back? How does that work?
The first thing I would offer, and one of the unique things about our program, it is 100% peer-led training. And we're very specific when we say training, because veterans and first responders like that word training as opposed to tools mm-hmm. or resources or treatment. So it's peer-led, which means the men and women who are delivering this program have walked a shift. They've gone into the burning building. They've shown up at the accident on the side of the road, or they've gone downrange and they have taken the fight to the enemy. And so that's the first thing, is you have peers who understand speaking to you. The second is we work very quickly to create a bubble of trust. And that bubble of trust is through one of those things that most first responders and veterans are very familiar with, right? And that's showing first before asking others to do. And so we disclose our trauma. We disclose, you know, our deepest, darkest moments to show two things. First and foremost, by speaking to those, you start to take away some of its power and its hold on to you. And second, to show that it's okay, that we should be talking about these things and that what you've experienced is not new. You know, and of course, we speak to them in things and terms and metaphors that they can quickly grasp onto. You know, we roll out a quote from one of, you know, the most ancient Greek historians, Thucydides, and we just say all men are equal, but those who are trained in the severest of schools are best. And we remind them that they're different, and we want them to be different, but they should be comfortable speaking about the things that make them different. And it's amazing how quickly trust is developed. And then from there, once we have the trust, once we get them talking and disclosing, we then give them the training to understand that there's nothing wrong with them. They are merely a product of their training and their experiences. And we give them, you know, these tools, resources to deal with life's stressors. We're not going to take away the trauma, but what we are going to do is give them the ability to respond instead of react to life stressors. And so it's one of those things that I'm so fortunate to see it play out month after month, because I get to see, you know, heroes come in one way and go out on a journey of growth.
How important was it for you to have that friend who called your bluff and didn't let you just say a four-letter word that I'm fine? How important was that in your life?
Extremely. And again, I have a hard time expressing my gratitude, you know, because a lot of times, you know, guys like he and I just, you know, it's what we do. It's what we say. It's what we do, right? You probably could be a rich person if you talk to a first responder or a veteran and you thank them for something they did. And, oh, it's what we do. It's what we do. But I would say that, you know, I owe him a debt of gratitude that, you know, I didn't think I would be able to pay back. And the nice thing about the way the world works sometimes, and, you know, I believe in divine intervention, is I've been put in a position now where I can give this gift over and over again to men and women who need it. And I have dedicated the rest of my life to trying to pay it forward the way that he paid it to me. And so he knows it. I probably should call him after we hang up this call and remind him again that, you know, he not only changed, but he saved my life.
So how important is it then for the rest of us to look at the people that we are connected to who may be struggling, and to make that phone call, to make that, send that text message? How important is that to do that on a regular basis?
It's where it should start and end. Mm-hmm. We all know people who have experienced trauma, and this is not a phenomena isolated to just veterans and first responders. You know, I one of the jobs I had post-retirement was in, you know, the healthcare industry, and I was in and around COVID. I was going around the country establishing COVID testing sites and vaccination sites, and there were people who had experienced real fear over this this disease. And so, you know, there's people out there that have trauma that they're carrying, and we should all take the time to genuinely look to our left and our right and ask the question, how are you doing? And we know, because we can sense when people are given the cop-out answer, we should try to penetrate that and say, no, how are you really doing? And then we need to do the most important thing that we teach our instructors in our program, and that's to stop talking and just listen. Don't judge. Don't try to rush in and give your solution. Just listen. Listen to understand. And so I would encourage anybody who's actually listening to this right now to ask the hard question and then stop and listen. You know, I always tell myself when I meet a new person, introduce myself, and then I say, wait. And wait is an acronym for why am I talking? Let that person speak. So absolutely.
I think in today's culture, that's really hard to do, is to stop talking and to listen. And how do you practice that?
Daily affirmation. You know, I spend my mornings, and this is what we teach our, you know, our heroes to do, is I spend my morning doing what we call own the morning. And in there's several habits that I've developed that are very effective. You know, gratitude. You know, I express my gratitude to the folks that I love, the folks that are in my life, to the position that I am in and the things that I'm able to do. You know, I go into meditation. You know, one of the things that we teach is transcendental meditation at our retreat. And it's an amazing, powerful tool to center yourself, to become congruent, to connect, you know, your brain with your heart. And it's in that moment, as I come out of my meditation, that I remind myself, you know, listen first before you speak. And I have it written on my whiteboard right here. And I look at it every morning, you know, wait, why am I talking? You know, I heard people speak about how many days it takes to create a habit. I would tell you that even if you create the habit, sustaining the habit becomes a challenge. And so for me, because, you know, I have a lot going on up here, just putting it on the whiteboard. And initially, I wrote it on Sharpie on my mirror. So when I looked in the mirror first thing in the morning, I was reminding myself to be patient.
those kind of small little things really do add up, right? I know I listened to or watch what's her name, Mel. Forget her last name. Anyway, she's a big speaker and personal development coach, and she talks about giving yourself a high five in the mirror every morning, and just that little thing can really begin to shape your mind in a new way. And I think things of what you just said to begin starting with gratitude is such a huge thing. And I think there's been scientific evidence that shows how gratitude really helps the brain.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I wake up, I have a little whiteboard that I write. Today I'm grateful for, and it's a message to my wife, and it sits in front of her mirror. And so when she wakes up in the morning and she takes that first sip of water and opens her eyes, she sees, you know, my gratitude displayed for her. And then we sit and we talk, and I'm always making sure that, you know, I explain the why to behind the what I'm grateful for. And then I put it out into the world, whether it's through, you know, we use an app that connects me with all of the PATH graduates, or if I, you know, I'm also in a men's development group, I put it out there into the universe, and it does feel good. And at the end of the day, when I go to reflection and journaling, which are how I try to end every day, identifying what I was successful at achieving that day and what maybe I needed to take, you know, a little more effort at, I realize I feel better. And it starts to help me understand what it was that caused the depression and the anxiety in retirement. It was that thing, I felt something was missing, that sense of purpose, that sense of, you know, doing things greater than self. And so just expressing gratitude is one of those things that we all can do that is bigger than self. And it actually does make you feel pretty good. Mm-hmm.
What do you guys, what's your goal for everyone who comes through your program? Where do you want them to be at, you know, when, by the time they leave?
First and foremost, we want them to be able to start to transcend their post-traumatic stress diagnoses. A lot of us get that label, and it is a label. We want to help them understand that there is nothing wrong with them. They are a product of their experience and their training. Their training has made them a certain way, whether it's hypervigilance, whether it's an acute sense of awareness, whether it's the ability to suppress fight or flight, whether it's the, you know, intense mission preparation, whether it's, you know, the ruthless after action of any mission or any, you know, respond to incident that they go through. Those things made them extremely successful in their profession, whether it be in uniform or as a military person. In the civilian world, people don't quite understand what those mean, and they think they're something different, right? Mm-hmm. Intense mission preparation, you know, gets sometimes looked at as, you know, this person is a zero defects or somebody who is, you know, very, very demanding. So we hope to help them understand that first and foremost, that they're a product of their experience and their training, that there's nothing wrong with them. The second is we want to move them into a understanding of post-traumatic growth, which is a term that has come into being in the last couple of decades. You know, to University of North Carolina at Charlotte, doctors came up with the idea of post-traumatic growth, Dr. Tedeschi and Dr. Calhoun. And what they did was they studied three samples of groups of people, parents who lost their kids, which is an unspeakable trauma as far as I'm concerned, POWs from the Hanoi Hilton Vietnam conflict, and folks who lost limbs, who were otherwise living a normal, active life, and they lost a limb, which also is pretty traumatic. And what they discovered in their analysis is that people could go on to do amazing things after that trauma, and they really wanted to try to understand why. And in it, they developed these five domains of post-traumatic growth, and this is where we really hope our graduates are moving into an understanding of and starting to exhibit these in their life. First and foremost, you know, an acknowledgement of their personal strength. They have gone through something that, you know, most folks can't go through, can't understand, and can't complete. They have personal strength that they can draw upon after their trauma, And it enables them to continue to grow and to face, you know, more adversity and challenges in life. We hope that when they leave, they're open to deeper and stronger connections with people. They need to understand that every opportunity to meet, greet, and welcome somebody into their life is an opportunity for them to continue to grow and to share an opportunity for others to grow and to heal. We try to get them to understand that life is absolutely a gift, and they have that gift. You know, their trauma didn't extinguish their life. Therefore, they should appreciate what they have, and they should try to make the most out of every day. We point to them and we say, your experiences have set you up to be able to experience spiritual and existential change, right? And we show them how this change could be manifested in life and how they could do, you know, amazing things. And then lastly, we get them thinking about new possibilities. We remind them, again, the rearview mirror is for reflection, not residence. And we open them up to a world of new possibilities. And we challenge them to identify those things that they want to do 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 15 years from now. And through positive affirmation, through writing out those goals and helping them, you know, establish achievable milestones to those goals, the hope is that they are moving towards a life of purpose and passion. And I think the most important thing we remind them is we are not a catch and release program. Once you join our tribe, you're in for life, and help is simply a ask away, and thousands of people will rush to their side with their shields ready to wrap around them and give them a safe place to reconcile what they're dealing with.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that in your own life, as well as those people that you work with, do you think that sometimes that loss of purpose really creates some of that initial trauma for them that I guess where they begin to recognize it in their life? Do you think that's the case?
I mean, I'll speak for myself, 100% for me. Mm-hmm. All I ever wanted to be was a Marine. From the time I was in fourth grade, it's what I obsessed about, and I was able to go and do it. And then to be told at a point in your life you could no longer do it, I started to question many things, ridiculous things that I had no business questioning, but I questioned them nonetheless. And so for me, that loss of purpose was devastating, because now it's like, who am I? The identity that I had encased myself in for 30 plus years was, well, I'm a United States Marine. It's who I was. Not only was it my profession, but it was who I was. And everybody who knew me knew that that's what I identified with. So to lose that for me was devastating. And I started to question, well, what am I now, right? And what value do I bring to society other than being a United States Marine? And there's where, for me, the first domino fell, if you will. And it was depression. I was just completely depressed about not being able to be a Marine anymore. I couldn't watch the news. I disconnected myself from, you know, social media. I disconnected myself from those that were still serving, that were actually still dependent upon my leadership and mentorship to continue on, you know, in uniform. And that depression, you know, led me to all of the other things that really started to impact my quality of life, right? So depression led to, again, self-medication with alcohol. Self-medication with alcohol led to a loss of interest in physical activity, which is, you know, one of the things that is extremely important, you know, to kind of stay healthy. You know, the loss of interest in activity led to a loss of interest in learning. And so I stopped challenging myself intellectually to learn something new every day, which led to, you know, I stopped reading, which led to I stopped taking interest in hobbies and interest. And so for me, that loss of purpose was devastating. And I think I probably underestimated its impact on me. And so again, I will speak generically. I see it in all of the heroes that come through our program. It's one of those things that when we have them start to map, you know, their old story, the traumas and the things that are impacting them, loss of purpose is typically high there up on the list. So I think it's very powerful.
I know a program like yours has a beginning and an end, But how long was that journey for you to get to where you felt that you had purpose again?
I mean, for me, and I would say, hopefully the journey has no end, because what mm-hmm. we send them home with is something that we are asking them to commit to for life. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for me, I would tell you, I'm still on my journey and I expect to be on my journey, you know, for as long as I'm able to be on it. To answer your question directly, you know, it's a 90-day official program, right? A week on the property and then 83 days through distance continuing education facilitated by Zoom calls and an app and a student workbook. And then again, just the connections you make with your cohort. But for me, again, as I was going through the program, I was asked if I was interested in being part of the foundation. My response was, I'm humbled, I'm honored, but let me get through these 90 days and see where I'm at. That sense of purpose really kind of shined on me that first class that I was there as the executive director and not as a student. And I watched from behind the scenes, those men come in and I watched the shift and I watched them go through that experience that that I had gone through. For me, that's when I realized that this is what I will do for the rest of my life. And so I guess it was about a 90-day transition for me. And now, again, we just graduated our 10th class this year, last week. And at the end of that class, you know, I sat back and I reflected on it. And again, it just felt like I had found my new sense of purpose, my new passion, my new ability to serve. So for me, it was about 90 days, but I hope I'm not done on this journey of growth and self-discovery. I hope there's many, many, many more years of interesting, cool things to learn.
Mm-hmm. And I know it's important, but how important is it to have others that are part of this cohort that have been where you were, that understand that culture, that understand the things that you've experienced?
It's one of the reasons I believe we're successful. And that's is we ask our heroes to evaluate their what we call their 3 to 5. 3 to 5 people that they have in their life that they go to for support, for love, for conversation, compassion. For folks who challenge them, folks who are not afraid to wave the BS flag when they know they're not being genuine and sincere with themselves. And so having the ability to find a new 3 to 5 or to take stock of your current 3 to 5 and maybe make some changes is, I think, key to being successful. You know, I lean on my 3 to 5 from my class. I lean on my 3 to 5 from the instructors who provided me this gift. And we encourage folks to build that network. And you know, what we teach them is that the key to happiness is interpersonal relationship and connections with people. And we help them realize that the things that they might be turning to fulfill themselves, whether it be money, whether it be retail therapy, whether it be drugs and alcohol, whether it be, you know, something else, is not going to be as effective as being connected with their fellow man and woman. And so what you spoke about is I think it's the critical component. It's the way you succeed, the way you transcend just an experience to a life of change is who you stay connected to and who you stay involved with. And so having the ability to connect the heroes with fellow heroes is, I think, invaluable.
Mm-hmm. So the retreat is 7 days, and then there's a 90-day kind of post-retreat connection. So, you know, I know that doing this kind of thing, it takes a lot of work. It's hard. And you have to choose your hard, right? That's kind of what I've learned in talking to people who are in recovery from alcoholism or drug addiction or something. You have to choose your hard. So when someone goes through the program that goes through the 7-day retreat and then they go back to their home, how do you keep them so kind of on the straight and narrow, so to speak, so that they continue the program to continue to finish out the 90 days so that they can get to a healthier place?
First and foremost, we continue to exhibit those characteristics, traits, and qualities that we are asking them to commit to. And so, you know, by living my life as what we call an expert guide, somebody who is authentic, who is genuine, who is congruent between your head and their heart, whose, you know, words and actions mirror each other. That's the first step in helping them stay focused on the path, if you will. And so we all live it every day through our example. We interact through, you know, many mediums to stay connected with them, you know, whether it's a Zoom call, whether it's a text chain, whether it's in our application where we challenge them to, you know, be better today than they were yesterday. And that's all we ask them to be. We give them really good resources and training while they're on the retreat. So we teach them transcendental meditation, and we ask them to commit to that twice a day. And that practice alone allows you to, you know, deal with the things that life throws your way. You take the transcendental meditation and you bookend it with a breathing exercise that we teach them, 4-7-8s, to help them stay grounded and in the moment. And those two we explain to them as their first line of defense for stress or when life starts to want to punch you in the face. We put them through a series of modalities that help them understand what they're experiencing and feeling in the moment. So we, you know, introduce them to equine therapy. And through that experience, you know, they understand how to stay grounded and connected and congruent in the moment, because a horse can smell, you know, 30 meters away when you're not congruent with yourself. And so we encourage them to, you know, continue to self-evaluate. We use archery as an ancient practice to not only being grounded and controlling your breathing and focusing on the moment, but also the metaphorical action of letting go, right? And so we encourage them to pick up that habit as a way to let things go. And then probably one of the most powerful things that we expose them to is a labyrinth ceremony, which is an ancient practice where civilizations would send warriors off to war, and they would have them stop at the labyrinth where they might receive instruction from the village politicians and get preyed upon by the village elders and explain why it is they were going off to war. And from there, they would lay down their civilian profession and pick up their shield, their helmet, their greaves, their spear, and go off to war after having gone through this labyrinth. And when they came back, they would go into that labyrinth and they would do a couple things. They would be asked to leave behind the experience, the trauma, talk about brothers lost, talk about the lives that they had taken, and then come out of that labyrinth and go back to community, a butcher, a blacksmith, a politician, a poet, a farmer, whatever. But the community welcomed them back. What we ask them to do is to recognize what it is they're holding on to that no longer serves them purpose or is causing them to feel unfulfilled or to feel, you know, pain. And we ask them to leave it in the center of that labyrinth. And so we encourage them to just go to, you know, Google Labyrinth Finder, and they can find a labyrinth near them, and they can go back to that experience, and whatever might be building back up onto their shoulders since they actually left the property, they can unload it in that labyrinth. And if all else fails, they are always welcome back to the retreat, and we will help them go through those practices on their own to rekindle and reconnect with what it is that we've asked them to dedicate them to. But it all starts with where I started my answer to you, and that's by me exhibiting the behavior that we're asking them to mirror. We probably stand the best chance at them staying committed to it.
Mm-hmm. So you guys work with not only local first responder groups, but you also receive people from all across the country. How do people connect with you guys, and how does that work for you?
Yeah, the easiest, most direct way to get to us is just go to our website, eagleoakretreat.org. On there's links for folks to apply. That's the simplest way to get connected with us. Once they fill out that application, you know, they're asked a couple questions to verify eligibility, and it will be very shortly after they hit submit that somebody from the foundation will reach out and will try to schedule an interview. After the interview process and we determine eligibility and suitability, they just get assigned to a class and we take care of everything else. So that's the easiest way. for folks, you know, this program Warrior Path is offered in a couple different locations around the country. They can also look at bouldercrest.org, which is the parent organization where the program was first developed, and they can find a location closest to them. But again, the simplest thing is eagleoakretreat.org and just click on the link to apply. I encourage folks, if they make it to the webpage, to look around it a little bit, look at some of the resources, who we are, what we are, and what we offer. It should help them understand, you know, what it is the program is intended to do and how it's helping change lives.
Mm-hmm. What's been some of the results of the work that you guys do over the past, however long you've been going? What's been some of the success stories that you can share?
And I'll caveat by saying that, you know, the results I'm about to share are not my results. These are validated by both the VA and Baylor University. They take a look at our empirical information and they let us know the effect that we're having or not. And I think that's important for listeners to know that, you know, we are endorsed and validated by somebody other than ourselves. So to your question, in all of our classes on the property, what we've been able to achieve is a 51% decrease in post-traumatic stress symptoms in our participants. From the time that they identify themselves as interested to the time that they leave that 1 week course, you know, 51% decrease in those symptoms. And those are the standard, industry recognized post-traumatic stress symptoms, right? So depression, anxiety, anger, withdrawal, substance abuse, addiction, so on and so forth. So a 51% decrease across all of our classes, every student. But I think more importantly is a 56% increase in their openness to the post-traumatic growth domains that I spoke about, right? So a recognition of their personal strength, a desire and an interest in deeper connections, that greater appreciation for life, that, you know, acknowledgement of spiritual and existential change that they have, you know, experienced both through their service and through their Warrior Path experience, and their openness to new possibilities. And to me, our ability to get that so quickly is what makes our program, you know, so remarkable. People ask me, you know, what is it? How do you describe it? And I like to tell people, we're the SpaceX of mental health treatment, right? Mm-hmm. Through disruptive thinking and through an innovative approach, we can get these results very quickly. And I think we can get them because we get the students to look at the root causes of their trauma, to disclose and discuss them, to try to reconcile and understand them, and then transcend them. So we've been very successful at flipping that narrative from post-traumatic stress to post-traumatic growth. And again, we're very proud of what we see. You know, for me, the simplest way for me to describe it to people is I just show pictures. Their first picture when they come to the program, and that picture 7 days later. And you know, viewers can trust me, or they can go verify by looking at our website. The smiles and the divine spark that is evident in their eyes at the end of that class lets us know that we are making an impact. And that, to me, is what keeps me coming back class after class. Mm-hmm.
And we'll be sure to put links in the show notes for your website and all that information. So if there's a firefighter, if there's a police officer, a first responder, a veteran out there who's listening, and they are starting to see some of the things in their own life that just aren't congruent to who they really are, what would be a good first step for them?
Well, I think that probably is the hardest step that you just described, and that's an acknowledgement that there is something wrong. If they have the courage to acknowledge that they're a little bit off and that they recognize things could be different, to me, that's the first step is recognizing that in themselves. And I would tell you, first responders and veterans are very, very brave people. And to me, that's the true sign of courage, right? Is to acknowledge that maybe I need help. So when they get to that point, you know, the first thing I would ask them to do is to look for that help. You know, and there's plenty of places out there to get this help. You know, obviously my hope is they look to us first because I truly believe in what we're doing, but explore what's out there because there are tremendous programs out there to help folks, whether it's substance abuse, addiction, whether it is post-traumatic stress, you know, whether it is addictions of another sort, right? Whether it is physical injury, you know, TBI or, you know, something that is actually physically wrong with them through their service. Cast their net widely and find the services that will address the issue that they've identified as a problem area. Don't suffer in silence. Please, my ask to any first responder, veteran who might be listening, don't suffer in silence. And don't think you're alone. There are folks out there who are suffering and have found a better way and have been able to benefit from these services that I'm speaking about. But again, it starts with, you know, wanting to be better, and they all deserve to be better. And then for a while, it took me a hard time to acknowledge that I deserved better, right? Mm-hmm. Some of my personal trauma wrapped up in my service trauma was, you know, again, our profession is a difficult one on families. You know, I mean, I suffered a divorce. I have an estranged relationship with my kids. And I blamed myself and I felt I didn't deserve better because I messed up my kids and I messed up my marriage. Mm-hmm. Just acknowledging that you do deserve better and going after it. Most simplest and you know, hopefully we can put, you know, my contact information in the program notes. Mm-hmm. Any first responder or veteran who's wanting something can reach out to me 24 hours a day and I'll respond. That's how committed I am to getting this gift to these men and women who so richly deserve it. But again, if they can have the intestinal fortitude to say, I recognize something is off and I want to do something about it, that to me, that's step one. And that's the hardest step, but it is also, to me, it's the bravest thing. And it's powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. I think reaching out like that is, and that's a hard thing to do for, you know, for a lot of, you know, especially first responders that I know, it was a hard thing to admit that and then to make that first call or make that first contact. And I know there's a lot of first responders that I know who have peer support programs that are very good. And, you know, if there's, you know, just start there, just reach out to your peer support lead. They will likely have connections to resources and people and places that you can connect to get the help that you need. So I encourage them to do that. So as we wrap up here, what gives you hope for veterans and first responders who are suffering from PTSD and other things like this? What gives you the most hope for them?
I mean, I think I'm in a unique position, right? I get to see this gift delivered over and over again. And I get to see, you know, what I experienced last week, folks coming in who had, you know, no hope, who were lost, who were withdrawn, who were angry, who were detached, who were suffering. And I got to see them depart the ranch, embracing the domains of post-traumatic growth. For me, what makes, you know, what helps me get up every morning and continue to lean into this is I think the indomitable spirit of the human being gives me hope, right? I can see folks transcend this trauma. I saw it in myself. I see it in the amazing woman that I'm married to now, who's a Gold Star spouse, lost her husband, who was a Marine for 26 years. I see the graduates of this program. I see the community such as yourself and others who have not, you know, have not forgotten that there are, you know, 1.6 million veterans in this country that need our help. Hmm. And so the fact that there are people such as yourself, such as, you know, my foundation, the other foundation, you know, the Veterans Affairs Administration, people have not given up on first responders and veterans, you know, and again, I won't discuss any of the things that we all see going on around the country right now. But there is, I draw hope from the fact that there are people who care about this community. And we recognize this community needs support, needs us. And the community continues to put its arms around our first responders and our veterans. And to me, that gives me hope. You know, just that alone makes me grateful to wake up every morning to put on this responsibility and to carry it as far as I can carry it and get it as far developed as I can get it. To me, I'm just optimistic and hopeful because I see it every day and I try to live it every day. And that just gives me hope for tomorrow, the next day, and, you know, the next decades of my life. So I truly believe in that. To me, it's a grassroots endeavor. It's that simple, but that's where I draw my hope from.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I would like to end this podcast with this question. What's something in the next month or two that you're going to do that's fun?
Well, I mean,
aside from your work, which I'm sure is fun for you to see people healed and restored.
Yeah, no, for me, I am moving towards full recovery from, you know, my trauma. I would tell you the other thing that will be fun for me is, I'm also on a discovery of personal and physical healing from my service as well. And so I will be at the anticipate being at the lowest, you know, body weight that I've been since I retired. And to me, you know, that will be fun, mm-hmm. to be able to get back to that point. Continuing to learn for me is fun. And so, I'm currently doing everything in my power to finish a book. Mm. I've got quite a few chapters written, and I would tell you that in the next 30 days, what would be fun for me is to get another 6 chapters of that book done. So I'm going to put that on my whiteboard as a to-do over the next 30 days to get some personal enjoyment. So I appreciate you asking me that, because now I have to create a goal and hold myself accountable to that goal. And that's, yep. That's part of post-traumatic growth.
Yep.
Taking advantage of those new possibilities. So Conrad, I appreciate you challenging me to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I see in your bio that you're an avid cyclist, and I have to ask this question because I'm one of two guys who rode a bicycle across the country this summer. What's your favorite place to cycle, on a bicycle?
Wow. I'm going to have to reach back out to you about riding across the country. I just finished my application for Warrior Expeditions. I'm hoping to be looked at favorably for that, to go from Washington, D.C. to Washington State on a bicycle.
Wow.
I would tell you, Okinawa, Japan was probably my favorite place to ride a bicycle. There was just something so amazing about the scenery, the culture, and the experience. That's probably, I would say, my favorite place to ride a bicycle. Texas is a little bit tough to ride a bicycle, at least in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, because of some of the road conditions and some of the, weather factors. It is very windy. Second would probably be last year, as part of a charity ride, I rode from Houston to New Orleans. And I would tell you, riding into New Orleans on a bicycle after traveling, 500 plus miles with a group of folks who were doing it for a really good cause is something that I'll never, ever forget. It was an amazing experience. And of course, I did it with my fiance at the time. And looking at her, and I enjoying that experience. So I'm going to stay with Okinawa, though. Yeah. There was something magical about my ability to get up in the morning, leave before the humidity started to build, and ride my bicycle from the central part of Okinawa to almost the northern part of the island and back. That was very healing, soothing, and therapeutic for me. So
very
thank
cool.
you for asking that too.
Yeah, there's something about getting out there on a bicycle and riding. I know this summer when we did this ride, it was it was just a really amazing journey, especially up in the Pacific Northwest, coming through down the Columbia River Gorge and then up across Idaho and into Montana. Some of those areas were just amazing. So on your, you said you applied to go on this Warrior ride. So that goes from DC to Washington?
It does.
Yeah. So
yeah, so
that's a tough ride because that's going against the prevailing winds and there's a lot more uphill that way.
So well, yes, and again, to the domain of personal strength and new possibilities in a world of post-traumatic growth, mm-hmm. I figure, why not go after something that I know is going to be challenging,
sure.
that I know is going to be something that will, require me to draw on you know, my reserves and my strengths. Mm-hmm. And to be quite honest with you, it's a part of the country I've not spent an awful lot of time in. Mm-hmm. And so for me, having the chance to pedal a bicycle into those communities that I otherwise probably would never visit, mm-hmm. and be able to share my story and, you know, share the story of all the other, you know, veterans and first responders who need to be heard. To me, it'll be worth it. Now, that's what I say now. I'll drop you a note if at some point I'm like, oh boy, why did I choose this? But we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. You know, it's one of those things when we decided to do this bike ride, it was, you know, once we actually, our first aha moment, our first like, oh crap, what did we just do moment was when we had a company who said, we'll give you two bikes. We'll sponsor you. Oh crap, now we got to do this, right? And so, but it really was an amazing experience, and I'm ready to go again, even right now. In fact, we're talking about going out to Iowa and doing Ragbri this summer, this coming summer. It's 500 miles across the state of Iowa with about 20 or 30,000 of your best friends. And so that'll be an amazing, amazing experience. How many guys are riding, or how many guys and girls are riding with you guys on that coast to coast ride?
So my understanding of the program is if you're approved for one of these slots, it's a solo endeavor.
Oh, okay.
So it's you. Yeah. So they, you know, they pick about 40 folks a year to do the three disciplines, you know, hike, paddle, and cycle. And if you're one of the fortunate ones to be selected by this organization, you know, they kit you out. They put the logistics and the support in place, and off you go. And so it's a solo endeavor. Mm-hmm. And again, as much as I enjoyed, you know, going from Houston to New Orleans with a group of, you know, 60 of my closest new friends, there's something appealing about maybe a solo endeavor, mm-hmm. because there's still some rough edges in my life, mm-hmm. that I'm still trying to reconcile with. You know, I mentioned my strained relationship with my daughters. It's the most important thing in my life right now, mm-hmm. beyond what I do at the nonprofit, is to heal that relationship. And my hope is that if I'm fortunate enough to get picked for that expedition, I can use that time alone to think through what it is I can do, what it is I have to say, what it is I have to own to try to reconnect and heal with my daughters. Mm-hmm. So my understanding is it's a solo endeavor. Mm-hmm. So I think there's some magic and power to that too.
Sure.
Nobody likes when other people are seeing you suffering.
Yeah, and you will suffer, because that's you know.
Yeah.
I know
we
suffered so on our ride, but but it's on the end, it's worth it. And I'm actually in the process of writing a book as well about that journey.
Awesome.
and kind of the things that I learned. It's going to be a personal development book based on the bike ride coming across the country. So. Hoping to have that done sometime by the end of this next year. So, yeah,
that's awesome.
So, well,
that's
congratulations awesome. on that, and perhaps we can connect some time and go on a bike ride. And
I would look forward to that opportunity. And if this Warrior Expedition opportunity doesn't work out for me, maybe I'll shout at you on your trip across the country. I'll crash your party.
Okay. Very good. Well, David, thank you so much for your time today. Thank you for your story, for sharing your story, and for the work that you guys are doing there in Texas. It's really important work. And so thank you for that.
Thank you, Conrad. I appreciate it. Thank you for keeping this discussion going and keeping everybody focused on this. You know, that's commendable, and I really thank you for that.
Absolutely. Thank you, David, for spending time with me today on the podcast. We will definitely have to get together and go on a bike ride. I look forward to that. A big thanks to all of you who have taken time to listen, to watch, and especially those of you who have left a review. I really appreciate those reviews. And if you haven't, please do so. I want to be sure I'm bringing content to you that you want to hear, and your reviews help. And please remember, you are not alone. If you need someone to talk to and don't know where you can turn, you can dial 988 for help. Be sure to tune in next week for another interview with an amazing first responder leader. Until then, be well, take care of yourself and those around you, and go out and do something great in the world.